I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Members of Congress are back in their districts for a work session, which gives us the perfect opportunity to catch up with Congressman Emanuel Cleaver and Kevin Yoder. Today, we'll ask how redistricting has affected their constituencies, their thoughts on President Obama's support of gay marriage, plus how funding for NBATH is progressing through Congress. An update from Capitol Hill on Up to Date after this hour's news. Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. As he is wont to do from time to time, Congressman Emanuel Cleaver made headlines last week when he expressed concerns over why black lawmakers are being targeted in ethics probes at a far higher rate than their non-white colleagues. We'll get an update about that this morning as we visit with our two area members of Congress, Democrat Emanuel Cleaver, who also heads the Congressional Black Caucus, and Republican Kevin Yoder, who serves on the House Appropriations Committee. We'll talk about gay marriage, that big Tiger grant that Cleaver is hoping to land for a new downtown streetcar system, and funding for that giant biodefense lab slated for Manhattan, Kansas. Congressman Cleaver, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Always good to have you here. Congressman Yoder, good morning to you too.
Thanks for having me on.
Congressman Cleaver, this ethics probe that you spoke out about last week, you're saying African-American lawmakers being targeted at a far higher rate than white lawmakers. What's your concern there?
Well, I was placed because of some things that I did in the way I operate in Washington. I was placed on the Ethics Committee, a special panel, and so I know a lot about how it operates, more than I want to know. And what has happened is, and it's not just Democratic, it's not black or white, is that we have an ethics process that is actually broken. And when you consider at least two of the cases, Maxine Waters and Charlie Rangel, members from the investigation task force sent out a memo to the ethics committee members saying, something needs to be done. This is not right. We're having people making racial jokes in here. We're having people calling Republican members, giving them information about what's going on. This came from a staffer.
On the ethics committee.
On the ethics committee. This is not like some wild racial claim that I made. This comes from a staffer. And there's been one reporter who's been interested in trying to make this a national discussion unsuccessfully, and one of the reasons is that people don't want to come to the defense of members of Congress. So what has happened is Maxine Waters, Charlie Rangel are both under investigation by individuals who have already made jokes about them, and some of them racial. And the final thing is that in this investigation, Maxine Waters, in particular, was just tossed out as well. She's guilty. Let's just, complete the investigation and charge her.
Meaning the staffer actually said something like
yes,
that, Congressman Cleaver?
And we have the memo. The newspapers in Washington have the memos.
Mm-hmm. So what needs to be done with this? This is just incredible to me.
Unfortunately, nothing is going to be done because they are members of Congress. And nobody wants to come to the defense of members of Congress. And I think the same thing would be true if they were white Republicans. No one wants to come to the defense of members of Congress, because they're all bad. They're evil.
Well, in fairness, Charlie Rangel, the Democrat from New York, has been under all kinds of pressure, all kinds of allegations about his own activities in New York City going back any number of years, right?
Charlie Rangel was under investigation because he requested it. He stood on the floor as the only member in the history of Congress to ask for an investigation because he believed that renting out office space in a building he owned for his congressional staff was actually illegal. And we have a number of members who went on a trip overseas, eight members, I think, who received a letter granting them permission to go, saying there are no ethical issues. And when they returned, they were charged with ethical violations. Now, everything I've said is public information, and so the listeners can check. It's unbelievable.
Well, so bottom line, though, you think there are African-American lawmakers being unfairly targeted here by the House Ethics Committee?
I'm not my statement was not that they're African-Americans. The writer, if you notice, put that in. That's not a quote from me. What I've said was that, for some reason, it appears as if our numbers are disproportionately among those who are being investigated.
Mm-hmm. What needs to happen from this point forward to rectify what you're describing here?
Well, what we hoped was that the Justice Department would step in, which they probably can't, because you have a, what do you call it, Kevin? We have the executive branch coming into the, the
separation
legislative
of powers kind of issue here, yeah.
And we have our own, and the Constitution gives the House the right to investigate itself.
Mm-hmm.
So unless something else comes up, I'm not sure how it's going to be done.
Kevin Yoder, is the Speaker of the House weighing in on this issue, this concern that Congressman Cleaver is raising?
Well, this was something that was created in the last Congress, I believe, a couple Congresses ago. And so it's a fairly new panel, and I think it was part of then-Speaker Pelosi's efforts to attempt to clean up some of the corruption that was allegedly occurring in Washington, D.C. And I think it's a legislative creation. It'll have to be resolved through legislation going forward. And I think it's probably not a big deal unless you're someone who's being targeted by it. And some of these things do appear to turn into witch hunts and all sorts of things, but that's probably nothing new in politics. Well, we've seen special prosecutors and all sorts of things in that town.
But it is a big deal if Congressman Cleaver is right and that lawmakers of color are being targeted at a higher rate
that
than
specific
than
issue certainly
white
is
lawmakers.
One. Certainly yeah. That specific issue is one that probably needs discussion. It's certainly disproportionate if you look at the numbers. There are several members, African-Americans, who are being investigated, and it's probably something that Congress needs to determine if this is functioning in the impartial, nonpartisan way that it's supposed to, because if the results are skewed, then and there's certainly been issues already. I mean, as Mr. Cleaver said, they've had folks already come forward and say they've been giving false information potentially to or pre-information to members of the panel to bias mm-hmm. them. And so it's a pretty new invention, this investigative panel, and it's already showing some problems.
Speaker Boehner says what about this, the Speaker of the House, Congressman Cleaver?
Well, I sent the Speaker a letter. I also sent the Democratic leader a letter, a carbon copy of a letter that I sent to Congresswoman Sanchez and Congressman Bonner,
mm-hmm.
not Boehner, Bonner, who chairs, they co-chair the Ethics Committee. And to this point, we haven't had any discussion. Now, Congress would like to eliminate this special panel that we created, but members are afraid to vote it out because then people will get attacked by their hometown newspapers.
For being unethical.
Yes,
yeah.
Like mm-hmm. they just want to get rid of this so that, they can do unethical things. And most of the people I know, and I think Kevin will tell you the same thing, are not even almost wanting to do anything unethical. One example, Mel Watt, North Carolina, 18-year member of Congress, no problems at all. He goes to a fundraiser on a Monday. On Thursday, an issue comes before the House involving banks. He votes against the banks. One of the banks had been at his fundraiser and had given him money. He voted against them, and the next week he's charged with an ethics violation.
He's an African-American
yes.
lawmaker?
Mm-hmm. Yes. No, there were some there were two whites who did the same thing.
And were they charged?
Yes. Yes, mm-hmm. they were charged. And everybody's saying, this makes no sense. You know.
So if you got rid of this panel, I gather you're in favor of getting rid of the panel?
Absolutely.
And you would put – what would be the mechanism then in place to watchdog Congress to make sure ethical behavior continues?
Well, we would still have the Ethics Committee.
Okay.
We have the this OCC, the Office of Citizen Something. And so somebody could listen to this radio show and say Cleaver needs to be investigated because he gave away some classified information. They could go and file a complaint. When the complaint is filed, it's made public.
Mm-hmm.
So then the media says Cleaver charged with ethics violation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it's proven to be nothing, there's not going to be the same level of press coverage. And so Mel Watt, front page, North Carolina, whatever it's called,
mm-hmm.
The Charlotte something, you know, he's charged, and then eventually they say it's a frivolous charge and it's dismissed. But
so there's duplicative activity
yes.
going on here when it comes to ethics probes, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I get it. So time for a change here is what you're saying.
Yes.
Okay. Let's move on. You know, as we sit here today, neither of you know for certain, which is just amazing to me, the shape of the district you'll be running in this fall. And that's pretty unusual, even for a redistricting year. Congressman Yoder, what do you make of this? Here we are in mid to late May, and you don't know the shape of your district, nor would anyone who wants to challenge you know the shape of your district. Pretty strange stuff.
Well, it's certainly disappointing. I'd hope that the legislature would be able to, in the regular session, as they always do every 10 years, reapportion the districts.
But they didn't get it done this
They
time.
Didn't get it done. They didn't redraw the lines. And so there's a court case now in federal court here in Kansas City in which litigants are going to address the court, and the court's actually going to have to draw the line. So in 49 other states, the legislatures drew the lines, and some of them did go to court. Missouri's one of them where the courts are reviewing to make sure they're were done properly. Kansas is the one state where they're actually – the courts will actually draw the lines.
The only state in the country,
that's
you're
right.
saying.
That's
yeah.
right. The only state that in the country where the courts will start from scratch and a three-judge panel will take testimony and then draw lines.
And the complaint from critics of this, of course, is that this is really ultimately incumbent protection. You guys may not want to say it because if you want to challenge Congressman Yoder or Congressman Cleaver and we're mid-May, you don't know what the shape of your district is, that's a very difficult thing to campaign against.
I don't think it's a good thing for the system, for the process, for anyone. I certainly, you know, we're 70, 80 days out from an election right now. And not having the lines yet, I don't know how that could be good for democracy or the electoral process. So my hope is that the courts in certainly Missouri, Manuel can talk about that, but in Kansas, the courts would judiciously and quickly draw these lines so we can move forward. I mean, these are two-year terms, and there's a primary August 7th and a general in November.
And the filing deadline has been extended in Kansas until mid-June, roughly mid-June, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be June 1st, and now it's been extended a little bit.
And that's a very different situation than we see in Missouri, where the filing deadline closed weeks ago. And Congressman Cleaver, you still don't know the shape of your district either.
No.
Because the state Supreme Court's reviewing it.
Yeah, nobody knows in the state of Missouri because you can't change the lines on one district without impacting the entire state. And our case is before the state Supreme Court. Now, the problem with us, which is unique from Kansas, is that the General Assembly has recessed, won't come back, has ended this session of Congress, of the legislature, won't come back until January. So for this to take place with legislative involvement requires a special session. What would cost hundreds of thousands of dollars
mm-hmm.
If they came back in.
To redraw
the lines. And so, you know, the question is, will the Supreme Court redraw the lines? And if they do, what's going to happen with the filing? I mean, I may be in Sam Gray's district. Maybe I'll end up being in what is now Vicky Hartzler's district.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows.
Mm-hmm.
So
Yeah, go ahead.
Steve, one thing I think we can be sure of is that Emmanuel and I won't end up in the same district.
We will
That's
not.
That's probably not going to happen.
State line's going to prevent that from happening. Yeah. Well, what do you make of this, Congressman Cleaver, the state Supreme Court seemingly to dawdle on this and not moving forward in a very expeditious manner?
Well, they're very secretive, as you might imagine. We've tried to find out everything. And I have, you know, a very good relationship with almost – well, with everybody in the no, that's not true. With almost everybody in the district, in the state delegation, and you know, we all are, shaking our heads. Nobody knows what's going on. I've been asking people. Well, does the Missouri Supreme Court, are they required to issue some kind of statement or something? And nobody seems to know.
No one seems to know.
The answer seems to be, they can do what they want to do. They're the Supreme Court.
Well, I think I'm going to write about this week. I just can't believe what I see going on here. And you know,
how long have they had the case in Missouri, the Supreme Court?
Weeks and weeks. Yes. And you all had to file statements very quickly to meet their self-imposed deadline. And then since all that was filed, they have just taken weeks and weeks and weeks to rule, and they still haven't ruled.
And the issue is no one knows when they will rule.
No one knows when they're going to rule. Yeah, it's completely up in the air. Well, does this bring this to a close here? Is it time then to do what the state of Iowa does, which is to have nonpartisan panels draw these lines in seemingly a nonpartisan manner and get this process out of politics in both Kansas and Missouri?
Well, I don't know that that's shown itself to work much better. I've looked at
and Iowa seems to work.
Well, I looked at some other states. You might look at Arizona. They had to go to court over the panel. They've brought in folks to draw district lines that have drawn lines for specific parties. It's hard to find a group of folks that are unaffiliated, unregistered, have no interest, and are nonpartisan. I think you just change the politics. I don't know that you necessarily make it any better. And so it's inherently a political process. There's judicial review for a good reason to make sure that folk, you know, things are done the right way. But ultimately, I think the nonpartisan stuff becomes just partisan in a different way. Who appoints them? How are they selected? What party's appointing? You're still in the same situation.
Yeah. I agree 100%. You cannot take politics out of politics. Mm-hmm. It won't happen.
doesn't work that way. We're just joining us this morning. You're listening to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. We're visiting with two area members of Congress, Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver from Missouri's 5th District, Congressman Kevin Yoder from Kansas's 3rd District. Our phone number here, if you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. Our email address, update@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Tom from Midtown emails us this: as the country heads over a fiscal cliff, what is the resistance in Congress to a constitutional amendment to balance the federal budget, Congressman Yoder?
Well, I supported it. I campaigned on supporting it. I supported it when I was in Congress. I'd support it again. You know, in the last 50 years, we've balanced the budget in Congress 6 times. So 44 years of unbalanced budgets. And so it's a bipartisan problem. Both parties have been guilty of overspending the resources, whether from cutting taxes or overspending or whatever it may be. Both parties have run unbalanced budgets. State legislatures don't have to do that. You've seen in Topeka and Jeff City and all across the country, states making tough decisions. You've seen our city governments tough decisions. Everyone listening on the radio right now has to determine how to balance their budgets. And, you know, if you had unlimited expenditures, think if you had an unlimited credit card, you might not be quite as frugal with your own dollars.
Yeah.
And essentially what we've given Congress is a credit card to run government without any limit. And many of the folks that spend the money won't have to be there when it's time to pay it back. So our national debt now is $16 trillion. We borrow between $1 trillion and $1.5 trillion a year right now, $3 to $4 to $5 billion a day, $40,000 a second. And so it's just, I think, shocking to most Americans that we can't get it together. And I think if Congress had a history of showing that they ultimately can get this done, it may not be necessary, but I just think both parties have shown that Congress shouldn't have the ability to borrow as much as they want without regard to how much they have. And so we ought to put a constitutional amendment in place that tells Congress they have to do their jobs.
Congressman Cleaver, you don't favor that idea, though, do you?
I agree with just about everything my conservative Republican colleague just said, except that I'm not in support of a constitutional
amendment.
Because of the unpredictable, nobody knew that we would be attacked on 9/11. And consequently, we went to war and began to borrow money to fight that war. And that would have inevitably taken us beyond our budget, a $3 trillion budget. And so, you know, we then have to go and borrow that money. There's no choice. We have to borrow that money.
But states, Congressman, when they run into a problem, they have something called rainy day funds. They set aside money so when bad things happen, they have money and resources to draw upon to deal with emergencies like you're talking about.
But the one thing that states also have that the federal government doesn't have is that the states can also depend on the federal government. In an emergency, the states know
like
that they
just experienced a couple of years ago.
Joplin is, mm-hmm. is one mm-hmm. a clear example. And what if we have, you know, 10 Katrinas hitting the Gulf Coast? I mean, we can't say, sorry, we got to balance the budget. We got to have some offsets. You know, we've got to take care of our people.
Congressman Yoder, 10 Katrinas, what do you do?
Well, I think you need to put provisions in any constitutional amendment that would allow Congress to override in cases of emergency declarations of war. You know, there are, I think, instances where many Americans would understand that there's a crisis at hand and that that there may have to be, you know, for a hurricane or for a war, some short-term financing.
And conservatives will say, hearing you say that Congress will be calling for exceptions to the rule every 20 minutes.
I think you need to put a big hurdle on it. I don't mm-hmm. think it can be 51%. I think you need to put a two-thirds majority or whatever it may be to put a hurdle in there. I also know we're not going to get a balanced budget amendment passed without a bipartisan bill. And so part of my job is to convince Emanuel and others that you know, we could find some ground here to work forward. I mean, you need two-thirds in each chamber. And that's just not going to happen to have the two, you know, Republicans have two-thirds of each right. chamber. And so, you know, I think Emanuel's raises reasonable objections, and we ought to work with the legislation to find a comfort zone where he and others would be supportive of it, because I think hopefully all of us can agree in concept that when Congress is given unlimited spending potential, they're not responsible with the dollars.
Absolutely.
We've got to figure out a way. And I think this is where the people are saying maybe we need to put something in law to restrain Congress. That the people want something in the Constitution to protect them from the overspending of their members of Congress.
What do the two of you make of this notion? And we may have discussed this on this program before, but here we are in an election year, and suddenly I'm beginning this program by asking you about redistricting and ethics probes when last year we were talking about jobs and budget deficits. You know, it just seems like it's an election year, and everyone just understands that you all can't deal with tough issues like that during a year like this because it's too hard to do and it's too political of a year. And so Congress essentially is taking a year off from dealing with the issue that every American says is uppermost in their minds, which is the budget deficit and creating new jobs. What about that?
Well, Yoder's problem is he's too logical, and he's trying to think about this thing, you know, logically, and that's not the way Washington functions. And I am embarrassed that we cannot handle big issues. I'm not sure that it's just the election year that prohibits us from moving. I think it was happening, you know, months after the last election. The Violence Against Women's Act is a perfect example. It was actually introduced in 94, I think, by Senator Biden, Senator Joe Biden, now Vice President, and it has historically moved through the Senate and the House without any problems at all. And then this year, you know, some protections were eliminated, and as a result, you know, the House has not. I mean, the House has approved it, but it goes to a conference, mm-hmm. and my fear is that it won't. You know, at the end of the year, we may have some kind of agreement. But
so for you, the problem's even larger than
yes.
just being an election year, Congressman Yoder. Yeah,
well, I think Manuel's correct in that, and that, you know, you look at the '80s, the '90s, 2000s. There were landmark pieces of legislation that were done in bipartisan fashion. You had divided government in many of the cases. and you had Social Security reform and welfare reform and balanced budgets from occasion, four balanced budgets in the late 90s alone with a Democratic president and Republican Congress. And so history will, I think, show us that when we have divided government, sometimes that's when we move the biggest boulders because both sides have an opportunity to have input and they work together and there's buy-in from both political parties. Yeah. And that really helps. When one side goes alone, it's very, very challenging. You saw that with the health care bill 2 years ago. Still no buy-in from half the country on that. And as Republicans have tried to move forward on entitlement reform without having buy-in from the president or left, that's been very rocky waters. And so, I think that the challenge is that we have just not been able to get the parties to work together. And whether it's the Violence Against Women Act or whatever it is, I think the two chambers are pretty close on that bill. But the differences become even if they're minimal, they become a nuclear war between the two parties over whatever it is. And it could be a social issue. It could be a fiscal issue. It could be really anything. And I think the majority in this country is so slim, polling coming out showing Romney leading one day and Obama leading the next day, some suggesting maybe the House could go back Republican, or Democrat, I'm sorry, and some, the Senate on the cusp of one or two seats. Every single issue potentially becomes who's going to be in the majority next year. And so no one has been willing to give an inch. And I think Emmanuel, myself, and others, we understand the give and take of politics to get things done. And it's, I would say, as a freshman, been very frustrating that we haven't been able to move forward. Yes, you draw your line. This is where I stand. This is where Emmanuel stands. And then we say, okay, what can we give? What could you be willing to do? And that's how you get policy done and move down the road. We haven't been able to do that.
Congressman Cleaver, Congressman Yoder raises an interesting point here. In hindsight, the federal health care law that just passed a couple of years ago, in hindsight, should the president have said, we're not going to move forward with a law of this magnitude without any Republican support for it? Because as we all know, no Republicans in either chamber signed off on that bill. In hindsight, was that a mistake to go forward in that manner? Even though he thought it was a very important thing to do, I grant you that. But was it a mistake?
Well, the health care bill, I support it. I go along with it. It is extremely important. Health care is the leading cause of bankruptcy in this country. Having said that, what happens when a Republican takes office or a Democrat takes office in the presidency? What they do, the first thing is that they go and do something that the base will cheer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually something very partisan. George Bush, first thing, tax cuts. So once he does the tax cuts, he's declared war. President Obama.
I'm moving ahead with my own party support. I don't care if Democrats support me.
That's
like Obama did.
Yes.
It's
kind
of the mandate philosophy.
That's right.
You get elected, I've got a mandate to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And Obama did the same thing with health care. So it doesn't matter who wins. That's what they do. They want the base to cheer immediately after the election. That's our guy. And what that does is just creates a higher level of polarization.
So you're saying it was a mistake then?
Healthcare was not a mistake. If we had it to do over again, I would hope that there would have been some way in which we could have gotten bipartisan participation. Otherwise, it's not just like now. I mean, here we are waiting for a Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, right. Let's go to some phone calls here before a break. Cynthia from Prairie Village. Cynthia, thank you for holding on.
Yes, I want to go visit an earlier subject matter you guys mentioned regarding the undue persecution of certain members of Congress. I'm hoping that when they are investigating this, they kind of widen the net because there is evidence, significant evidence, of this occurring within federal employees at the senior level. And unfortunately, I have to call it the Obama backlash, that there's an undue amount of investigation of senior federal employees of color ever since Obama has made it into White House, because I think there is an issue or a comment that you have a black president in White House, therefore we can do things differently. And I especially have two clients who are currently experiencing this, and it is outrageous what they're going through right now.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Cynthia, what do you know about discrimination against senior-level federal employees, Congressman Cleaver?
Well, because of my position as chair of the CBC, I get a lot of that. And for the most part, we try to stay out of it, although we are, as the caller suggested here, I mean, we are bombarded with individuals who work in the federal government claiming that they are, being investigated. We have not become involved in any of the investigation. We try to stay out of that. But it merits, I think, at least some attention by, some kind of outside group, not Congress, not necessarily Congress.
Is there a path for folks who feel discriminated against? They go where in the federal government?
Well, the way the system is supposed to work is that unless something involves the person who's directly over you, you go to that person, the mm-hmm. person who's directly over you, and there's always a chance you could file an EEOC complaint.
Right.
But they are about 3 years behind.
Right.
And people feel like nothing is being done.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Congressman Emanuel Cleaver, Congressman Kevin Yoder. We'll talk about gay marriage, MBAF funding for that big biodefense lab out in Manhattan, Kansas, Iran, Pakistan, and a whole lot more. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's visit from the Texperts, you'll find it in all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, three Johnson County librarians return with some great summer reads for kids of all ages. And this evening, as part of the Kansas City Library's Hail to the Chiefs presidential series, author Zachary Carabel will speak about President Chester A. Arthur. The 6:30 lecture is preceded by a 6 p.m. free reception, and it all takes place at the library's Plaza Branch. For more information, visit kclibrary.org. Well, this hour we're talking with two members of Congress from our area, Congressman Emanuel Cleaver and Congressman Kevin Yoder. Our phone number here again, 816-235-2888. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Well, gentlemen, your favorite topic, gay marriage. President Barack Obama just announced his support for gay marriage. Congressman Yoder, what do you make of it? Is his opinion sway many folks in the 3rd District of Kansas?
Polling is showing that it hasn't really made much of a difference in the president's polls either way. That I think most people understood that was the president's position, that probably wasn't coming forward with it for a variety of reasons, and knew that he had to and did so. But I don't think there were a lot of shocked faces
around the country. What's your position on gay marriage?
Well, I support marriage between one man and one woman, but I think it's a state issue. Frankly, I think the federal government ought to protect the rights of states to define that, ought to protect the right of Massachusetts to define it how they want to. Kansas has defined it as they want to. And
so you'd be an opponent then of any push to legalize gay marriage in Kansas?
Well, it's a state. I think the legislature would have to decide. What I think in terms of our federal role is that we ought to protect the right of Kansas to decide, for Missouri to decide, for Massachusetts to decide.
And if the state were to decide, you'd be on the side of opposing gay marriage for Kansans?
I think that'd
legalizing
be up to,
gay marriage.
You mean to impose it into Kansas for Massachusetts?
I'm wondering what your personal opinion is if it were to become a state issue in Kansas.
If it were to become a state issue, I support marriage between one man and one woman.
Okay. Congressman Cleaver?
This is an extremely complicated issue that
Is it?
Extremely complicated.
Why?
Because most of the people who oppose it are doing so on religious grounds. Last week, the Democratic caucus asked me to come in and make a presentation to the caucus on how to deal with this issue. And I started out by saying, most of the people with whom you have a discussion are going to oppose it on religious grounds. If it is a minister, bail out of the debate quickly, because you're probably not going to be equipped with the biblical knowledge to even stand on the same ground. It is complicated. First of all, the book of Leviticus, the book of laws, believed to have been written by Moses, says that for a man to have sex with another man is an abomination to God. In Leviticus, and then it goes on to say, and if they do, they should be killed. Hmm. So when people say I oppose this on biblical grounds, the next question is how many have you killed? And of course they can say, well, I don't believe in killing. And also, we'll find the same in Exodus 21. We'll find, we're supposed to have their guidelines for slave ownership.
Mm-hmm.
But it's okay to have slaves. So, I mean, if people are honest, that it is a confusing issue. Jesus never talked about same-sex issues. And none of the major nor minor prophets talked about it either. And none of the prophets ever talked about women with women. It was always men with men. Now, there's a German term, Sitz in Leben, or Sitz in Weltbewegung, and some of your callers who are probably better German speakers can say it closer. But it means situation in life. Mm-hmm. And much of the Bible was written based on the situation in life. It defined the times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that people ought to be able to have a relationship with whom they want to have a relationship with, and the United States government shouldn't be involved in it.
Mm-hmm. Having said that, where do you stand?
Oh, I think that if two individuals want to get married, they ought to be able to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one thing we know that the Bible talks about from cover to cover is the issue of love and respect and appreciation and justice. And so I choose to put the love part number one.
Okay. Let's go to some phone calls here on other issues. Spencer from Kansas City, Missouri. You're on with Congressman Yoder and Cleaver. Spencer, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
Well, thank you. Good.
Great. Thank you for taking my call. First, I want to say specifically to the previous issue that love's going to win, and I hope both of you are on the right side of it when it does. But I want to take you back to health care, and I'd like to hear from both the representatives on this, because it seems to me that many of the provisions in the Health Care Act were formerly Republican positions, positions that Republicans were in favor of. And so I take issue with the partisan issue of the president forcing it through at the beginning, and I wanted them to speak to is it possibly the increasing tilt rightward of the Republican Party that has made this a partisan issue as opposed to an issue that maybe 5 years ago, if this bill had been proposed, it would have been agreed to by both sides?
A well-phrased question, Spencer. Congressman Yoder, what do you think?
Well, I think we see this a lot in politics, and you saw it with the health care bill, and you also see it with the Paul Ryan budget.
Because he's right. There were aspects of this bill that were originally
Mitt Romney
Republican
supported
ideas.
The individual mandate.
That's right.
That's well documented. And
mm-hmm.
so that was, at one point, I think more of a conservative alternative to single-payer socialized medicine, is to say, well, let's everybody just buys their own insurance. And so I think certainly that sometimes it gets, depending on who proposes the idea, it changes political allegiances, and that's probably unfortunate. You've seen the same thing on the Paul Ryan budget with his reform to Medicare. The premium support system, essentially a Medicare Advantage for all, came out of the Clinton White House. So you've got Democrats opposing a Clinton idea, Republicans opposing what was once a Republican idea, theoretically. And so I think it does get very complicated, and it is partly because of the political nature of things. You know, in the primary, Hillary Clinton supported the individual mandate. The president opposed it. And he said, what are you going to do, force everybody to buy insurance? If they can't afford it, they can't afford it.
And I'm guessing Spencer's probably thinking he's really tired of hearing about politics and mucking
right.
up the works out there.
Right. No.
Yeah, it's interesting how many issues seem to be difficult, quote-unquote, in an election year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's frustrating. We felt the same frustration, like I said, on the Medicare issue, sort of, you know, coming out of a Clinton think tank is the issue that Republicans have been pushing, and it's been called, you know, all these radical things. And so, sometimes folks need to take a deep breath and work on some give and take and go forward. I think one of the challenges with the individual mandate on a federal level is that it may be ruled unconstitutional. And that's neither left or right. That is an issue of whether the federal government can force individuals to buy a product. And it's just without precedent. And I think there's a lot of concerns that this may be one of the last off-ramps of limiting the scope of the federal government. There was a time where the country understood the federal government's powers to be very limited, and many more of these powers belonging to the states. It now, in at least in the culture and in many of the court decisions, the federal government's role has expanded greatly mm-hmm. to a point where it would be hard, I think, for most Americans to distinguish what the federal government's powers are versus those powers of the state. And the 10th Amendment makes it very clear those powers not given granted to the federal government are reserved for the states. And over time, that's expanded and expanded and expanded. I guess the question is, what isn't the federal government's role now? I mean, it can really do anything. And the only reason, Steve, I think that's critical is because as the federal government tries to do everything, I think some of its core functions that it's been trying to function with haven't been as effective. The deficit's out of control. We're trying to do so many things that I don't think we're doing anything really well at this point.
Let's go to Elizabeth from Kansas City, Missouri. Elizabeth, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call, and a great show again, Steve,
thank you,
as always. My question is for, or comment rather, is for both of the congresspeople. I wanted to know what their take was on the Tea Party and how it has affected American government. My personal opinion is that, you know, it's hard to compromise with somebody when it's my way or the highway. And when I was growing up, you know, it was a point of pride for people in Congress to actually work with each other. That was called statesmanship. And I'm wondering, you know, where has that gone? Thanks so much.
Congressman Cleaver, what about the Tea Party's influence here?
Well, I think the Tea Party has impacted politics, and it's forced many Republicans to move uncomfortably to the right of where they would normally be. I like to say Ronald Reagan could not get the nomination today.
Because Nancy Kassebaum has said she couldn't get a nomination today.
Yeah. I mean, Reagan raised taxes 8 times. He would be out. He also appointed people to the Supreme Court that are not following the conservative tilt. And I think that it's dangerous because some of the new guys, they come in with a philosophy, we don't want to compromise at all. Healthcare, I came in supporting a public option. I compromised, and I'm willing to compromise on some things to get something done. But my view is that the Tea Party members, no compromise at all. It's let's go this way, and if we don't go this way, we're going
to
fight.
Now, speaking of that, Jim writes as Congressman Yoder, I'd like to thank Congressman Yoder for not signing the pledge, which I take it to be the pledge that you will never increase taxes under any circumstance whatsoever that Grover Norquist has pushed. Could he explain his reasoning for being among a small minority of Republicans to resist signing the pledge?
Well, there's a lot of pressure in Washington to really dance for whatever special interest group wants you to dance for them. And they've got scoring systems, and they've got pledges, and they've got all sorts of things. And you can spend all your time jumping through hoops. In the House, there are 6 Republicans out of 240 who have not signed the Norquist pledge. I'm one of the 6. And, you know, I just believe that my pledge and my oath is to the citizens of the district. I'm a Kansan, grew up there all my life, went to University of Kansas, live in Overland Park. I know Kansans. I want to listen to them. I want their scorecard to be what's important to me. And so I've resisted the temptation to do those things and haven't signed any of the pledges. And I really believe ultimately, look, I don't support raising taxes. It is not to say that I think we should. I think we need to be looking to reduce spending and finding ways to
But you want the flexibility.
Well, I just think that we need to remain open-minded on these types of issues and that we ought to be able to work together. And I think what the pledge says is I'm never even going to hear your argument. So if Emanuel or someone else says, here's what I'd like, here's what I think we should put in a bill, and I say, well, I've pledged to completely never even attempt to think about what you're bringing forward, really shuts down a lot of dialogue. And so I resisted the temptation to do that, and I appreciate the fact folks appreciate that.
Interesting comment here from a listener in Overland Park. I think she probably speaks for a lot of folks. If I did not know better, she writes, I would not believe that either of you are part of such an irrational ideological body. What is wrong today is that elected officials, particularly legislators, all speak rationally about the problems and agree about most issues. They actually know what is wrong. However, then they go back and vote straight party line and nothing changes.
Mm-hmm. That's not completely accurate, but
get the sentiment.
I do, and whoever sent that email is correct. There are a lot of people who want to compromise and get things done. And now there are a lot of them who don't, but there are some of us. I mean, as I mentioned before, 50 Democrats and 50 Republicans. I was one of the organizers. Came together to support the Erskine Bowles budget deficit reduction plan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that 100 members of Congress came together and said, let's get this done.
Yeah.
Nothing has happened as a result. But I do think probably Kevin Yoder and I could sit down on these issues, and if nobody bothered us, we could probably work out the compromise the way they did in the old days before 1994.
I think I'd probably have to help you a little bit.
Well, somebody would. You'd be good as
that.
That'd
be me, yeah. Hey, a couple of quick updates on some news items here. Congressman Yoder, NBAF funding. This is that billions of dollars for a new biodefense lab out in Manhattan, Kansas. Is that thing going to get funded or not? Where do we stand with it?
I think it is. There's $75 million for it in the Homeland Security Appropriations Bill that passed the House Appropriations Committee last week. There was some concern in Kansas because the president had zero funded it, that that might mean the administration is turning against the project, and that, and everybody knows when dirt's not moving, you know, sometimes people get second thoughts and projects don't go forward.
Yeah.
It is a tremendously critical issue for the country. Most of our security briefings are telling us that one of our biggest vulnerabilities is in the food agriculture system, someone poisoning our food supply and terrorizing our country. And so the facilities we have right now are outdated and unable to do the research. They did a nonpartisan independent search on where to put the building. Manhattan on the merits won it over big states like Texas and other states. And so, you know, Kansas is, and Kansas City in general, is really building itself as a hub of bioscience research,
animal health.
We're working towards getting the University of Kansas Medical Center to be a National Cancer Institute designation. We're going to find out about that here hopefully in the next month or so. And so I think we're really putting ourselves on the map in terms of this research.
You're still hopeful.
This NBAF is a critical component of having that in Manhattan, Kansas.
Congressman Cleaver, the Tiger Grant for Kansas City, Missouri. This is, what, $25 million to help fund a new streetcar system in Kansas City that would run from River Market up to Crown Center. Give us an update. Are we going to get that money or not?
I think we're in the running. We are going to be among the finalists, I believe. I was able to set up a meeting with the mayor and the county executive with Ray LaHood, the Secretary of Transportation. Ray LaHood is very clear about his belief that we have submitted a very, very competitive proposal. And it's going to be difficult because we've already gotten a big chunk of Tiger money, $50 million already, and we just opened one of the bridges as a result of that money here.
Right outside the studio on Troost,
And so that's going to be difficult. But I think that, you know, I'd give us 60% chance of getting it.
So still not sure.
Not sure.
Yeah.
Not sure.
Okay. Congressman Yoder, you just introduced the Congressional Salary Reduction Act, which would reduce congressional salaries by 5% as well as eliminate automatic cost of living adjustments that members of Congress receive every year. Why did you do it? And it's not going to pass, so what's the point?
Well, you know, I hope it has a chance of passing. It's certainly very difficult to get Congress to do those types of things. We did it in the Kansas legislature, cut their salaries, cut our salaries back 5%. You know, I talked to so many constituents who are out of work. We did a jobs fair a month ago and had 1,500 people show up, 100 employers. And so really job creation is the top issue. We haven't talked that much about it on the program. There's so many things to talk about. But there's so many people out there hurting because of unemployment over 8%. And talked to a lot of small business owners who haven't taken a salary. People have had salaries reduced. And so there's a lot of frustration with Congress sort of themselves being immune to the challenges of the economy. And so as a new member, you know, I believe it's incumbent on us to try to restore the institution. And so looking at some of the benefits and perks that members of Congress get and trying to reduce some of those, I think is appropriate. Looked at a 5% salary cut as a way for Congress to show the American people that we are serious about the challenges facing in the economy.
Mike from Kansas City, Missouri. Welcome to Up to Date, Mike.
Steve, what a fantastic show. I have to congratulate you. I mean, you do great shows to begin with, but it's very important to hear this dialogue between these two members of Congress. I'm hoping that both of you come back because we really like hearing. It's not a debate. You just are sharing your opinion, your position. It's very important. My original comment was really that Obama's recognition of marriage equality was historic, and it is extremely historic. But the point of it is to continue a dialogue, is for us, just as Representative Yoder said, it doesn't cut off the dialogue. We agree to continue to explore and to talk about these issues. And that's something that I do see missing in Congress, and I hear it in your show. And just kudos to all of you, and let's keep talking. Let's try to work together, because that's what this country is all about.
Mike, I appreciate your nice words. Thanks for the call. Just briefly, gentlemen, Iran nuclear capabilities. Talks have opened in Baghdad just this week between Iran and six world powers on curbing Iran's nuclear capability. Where are we going here? How concerned are you about Iran right now, Congressman Yoder?
Very concerned about it. You know, when you look at Israel, our greatest ally in the Middle East, and the threats that Iran has made towards Israel and towards the United States, a nuclear Iran is a threat to security around the world, and it's something that's certainly I don't think the United States can allow to happen.
Okay. We're going to have to leave our show right there. Gentlemen, thank you for your time. Thanks for the great dialogue between a Democrat and Republican. That's Congressman Kevin Yoder from Kansas's 3rd District, Congressman Emanuel Cleaver from Missouri's 5th. Guys, thanks very much.
Good to be with you.
Always
Steve.
Good to have good you. Bet. You'll find more details about our guests and more information about our program at kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the program, 3 Johnson County librarians return with some great summer reads for kids of all ages to keep your kids busy during the long, hot summer months ahead. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.